So guys, last week we talked about that very important lesson about humility and about service, and as Jesus washed his disciples' feet, okay? And then we also talked about a little bit about the symbolism, as Jesus talks about being clean on the everywhere and just needing your feet washed. And then he turns to his disciples and says, just so you know, you guys are all clean. All of you except one. Okay? And so he kind of begins to point out that something's wrong with one of the guys. So actually, let's go back and read in John chapter 13, verse 10. We already did that. Okay? I'll let you guys read it for yourselves, and then we'll move down and we'll continue on from there. So if somebody could read John 13, 10.
A person who has bathed all over does not need to wash, except for the feet, to be entirely clean. And you disciples are clean, but not all of you.
Okay. And this is one of those places where Jesus' disciples really still don't understand exactly what he's talking about. They will a little bit later. But it's like, sometimes you wonder, are these guys completely like oblivious to what's going on around them? And sometimes the answer seems to be yes. And Jesus, this lesson on humility, he teaches it like three times. And finally, he asks them, okay, do you understand what it is that I just did? Do you finally get it? And I'm sure they're all like nodding, even though not all of them got it, not at that point at least. Okay, well, today he's going to go a little bit farther. Okay, he's pointed out that one of them's not clean. Okay, now he's going to point out exactly which one it is. And yet, in the midst of all of that, only one guy actually gets it. Maybe he's the only one close enough to hear Jesus as he actually identifies him. But let's take a look at this. And then, okay, just so you know, in the midst of all of this, I got a little puzzle for you to do. I don't know if you like puzzles, you like mysteries, like word problems. I was one of those freaks, like when, in math, I always liked the word problems that everybody else hated, okay? And we still do some of the mystery stuff. In fact, this was Nicole's idea, and Cora really got into it because Cora loves mysteries as well. So we started doing a murder mystery, and I don't know how much she paid for it, but it comes in a box and has all of these, like, it's like a realistic, like, police investigation. You got reports from all the witnesses, you got the autopsy report, you got all of this stuff, and you're supposed to kind of figure out who did it. Except they don't give you enough clues in the first box. So you have to go like 6 months before you finally get enough clues to actually figure it out. And we've been kind of working through that. And at first I was resistant. It's like, Nicole, I don't have time for all of that. You know, it really is kind of a pain. We're going to sit down, we're going to break all this stuff, we're going to read all this stuff. It's not even real. However, now that we're into it, it's like, it's really kind of cool. And if you're interested in something like that, you can talk to her. But we have always enjoyed as a family some of the mysteries, okay? And so let me just tell you as we go along, I'm going to have a little mystery for you, and it's about who's seating where. I mean, have you seen the Da Vinci's The Last Supper? They got all the disciples, okay? And Corey, you don't have to put that up yet,
okay?
But many times, like, okay, which one is which? Can you figure all that out? Actually, you can do it from Scripture, and I'll show you how you can do that. In fact, we're going to walk through some of that. Okay? Anyway, today Jesus is going to disclose which one is his betrayer. Except there's only one guy that's actually going to get it. Okay? We'll talk a little bit about why he's able to and the rest of it. Now, remember, we're in the upper room now. This is the last night. This is the last supper that they're going to have together. Jesus is going to be betrayed tonight, just so that we know where we're at. Okay? Okay. So, now, Corey, you can put up Da Vinci's picture. Now, usually when we think about the Last Supper, this is like the really, really famous picture. And almost everybody, when you say the Last Supper, this is the picture that comes to mind. Is this the one that you think about?
No.
Well, because the truth is, the Last Supper would not have looked anything like that at all. Okay? And actually, go ahead and put up the other picture, Cora. And this is the one that it's not as realistic as I would like it to be, but it's much, much closer to what the real Last Supper would have looked like. Okay, so compared to Da Vinci's, which is very famous and everybody's seen it before, what do you notice that's different about this one?
They're kneeling.
Okay, and that's one of the things that's actually off here, but hopefully you notice that the table's really, really, really low. Okay, it would have been a very low table, and they could kneel like this, and sometimes they may have, okay, but in those days, dinner was like an all-night thing. It was like this party that went on and on and on and on, okay, and so they actually recline at the table. Okay, so they typically would be laying down on pillows. Not that you can't get up on your knees every once in a while to gesture or call somebody's attention, but mostly they would have been laying down. Now, I want you to think for just a second. If you were laying down at the table and you were going to eat, how would you lay? Okay, some people say, well, lay like this. Well, that makes it really hard because, and if you're right-handed like most people then, typically you would lay on your left side with your left elbow down and your right hand could reach out. Okay, and so, okay, so that's typically how this scene would have looked. Okay, probably laying at a bit of an angle on your left elbow, reaching your hand forward to get whatever it is that you needed. Okay, now, also notice that the table is, it's not just one long table, that was cool, but it's actually kind of a U-shaped table. Okay, why is it U-shaped like that? Remember, they're going to be laying down, and so typically if you had somebody that served or needed to serve someone, they would have a real hard time stepping over all the feet, so they leave the U part open so that servers can come in and out of there, and so that they could also kind of see one another, right? If you've ever been at a really long table, I hate the way that they set up like wedding tables. The traditional way. I don't know, they're doing a lot different these days. Now they got like a table for the bride and groom one, and then everybody's scattered around. But they used to do this huge long table, and you'd all be sitting there. And if you're in the wedding party, then you're probably sitting next to a girl that you don't know all that well, because the bride knows her really well, but you may or may not. Okay, and then you're sitting next to another couple, and it's like all this is like, my gosh, you know, I'm surrounded by people I don't even know that well, and the guys that I do know are down far enough that I can't even talk to them. You know what I'm saying? The whole table is set up really long like that, so not very conducive to be able to have a conversation. Okay, about how many people can you have a conversation with? The one that's on your right side and the one that's on your left side, right? You know, maybe you can get the attention of the one that's down there, but three or four down, 12 seats down, can you get their attention? No. Okay? And so, here's the really cool place is, this is the way that it would have been set up. Okay? The honored guest is in the second seat at the one end of the table. So, we can tell which one Jesus is, right? Okay? So, the question is, we're going to put this up and down a couple of times. I'm going to show you how you discern all of this through actual reading of Scripture. So, it's kind of like a word puzzle. Okay? And then we'll move on from there. So, the question is, could you identify the rest of the guys? And they do give you a little bit of clues in this particular picture, which is why I picked it out, even though they're not laying down the way that they should. They have guys, some of the guys doing something that they would have been doing in John's account. Are you with me so far? Okay, we haven't lost anybody, so are you excited about this? Or are you like, I hate word puzzles? Maybe you'll like them after this. Okay. No chairs. Jesus is not in the center of the table like the bridal parties used to be. You got the low table. Okay. So, we're going to come back to this in just a second. But I want you to pay attention now as we kind of work through today's scripture. All right, so we're actually in verse 21. This is where we left off. So, if we can, somebody could read for me, John 13, verse 21.
Now Jesus was deeply troubled, and he exclaimed, I tell you the truth, one of you will betray me.
So before he said, one of you is not clean, or all of you are clean except one. And now he says to this group of his disciples, the guys he's been with for a solid 3 years, done everything together with, just so you know, guys, one of you is going to betray me. Okay. Verse 22.
The disciples looked at each other, wondering whom he could mean.
Okay, and so now you got the 12 guys at the table, and they start looking at each other, and they're like, who's he talking about? One of the things that stands out right away is they don't have the slightest clue who it could be. As far as they're concerned, they all are great guys. Right? Nobody comes to mind. They're all not like immediately like, yeah, I knew Judas was a rat. They don't do that with anyone. In fact, let's go to Matthew. Matthew gives us another little bit of an account, okay? And something that's really also very interesting. So let's go to Matthew 26, verse 21 and 22. Somebody could read that.
While they were eating, he said, I tell you the truth, one of you will betray me. Greatly distressed, each one asked, in turn, am I the one, Lord?
Okay. In fact, in the middle of that, not only do they not point to somebody else, finger somebody else, they start to question themselves. Each one in turn asks Jesus, he's like, are you talking about me? Because each one looks at the other guys and he's like, it can't be one of them. He must be talking about me. Okay? There's actually only one guy that doesn't say that, and that is the guy who is the one, because he already knows, and he doesn't want Jesus to point him out. Okay? So, in this next passage, here's where you're going to get the first clues about who is who. All right, so we're going to pay attention, especially to this, and we'll kind of read this one really slow. So we're going to go back to John 13, and now verses 23 to 25, keeping in mind that picture that we looked at before, and then we'll put it back up again. Are you with me? Okay.
The disciple Jesus loved was sitting next to Jesus at the table. Simon Peter motioned to him to ask, who's he talking about? So that disciple leaned over to Jesus and asked, Lord, who is it?
Okay. So first, and some of you guys already know the answer to this one, who is the disciple that Jesus loved?
John.
Okay. Just so you know, John writes the book of John, and in the book of John, he never mentions his own name anywhere. Every time he has to refer to himself, he refers to himself as the disciple that Jesus loved. And so, guys, whenever you're reading John, and you see the disciple that Jesus loved, John's talking about himself. Okay? And so he says, I was sitting next to Jesus at the table. Basically is what John says. Okay? When Peter motioned over to me, who's he talking about? And so I leaned over to Jesus and I asked him, Lord, who is it? Okay, let's put the picture back up for a second. Which one is John, the disciple that Jesus loved? Can you tell? Okay, so we can rule out all of these guys, right? Because they're not close enough to be able to lean into Jesus. Ah, the pointer. Thank you, honey. So we can rule out all of these guys because they're not really close enough. There's only one that can kind of lean into, okay? And that's one of these two guys right here, okay? The ones that are on either side of him can easily lean into Jesus and ask, Lord, who is it? And so, which of these two guys do you think it is? Okay, well...
Which one? What was the question? Who's John? Who asked him?
Yes.
The one on Jesus' left, right?
This guy?
No, the other one.
This guy?
Yeah.
On Jesus' right, on our left? Okay.
Yeah.
How can you tell?
It looks like they're leaning that way while they're eating. It looks like the side that they're leaning on.
Yeah, and actually, remember we talked about before? I'm leaning on this left side. Okay, and so Jesus would have actually been leading into this guy, and for this guy to talk to Jesus, he would have had to lean into him. Okay, and so this guy is the one that has to lean into Jesus to be able to talk to him. So guess what?
That's John.
Cool. Okay. Now, what do you know about Peter? Well, he's the one that is motioning over to John. So ask him. Okay? Why doesn't Peter ask him himself? He's obviously too far away. So, where's Peter at?
Across from him.
Over here?
Yeah.
See, now I picked out this picture to help you guys out. Right? There's only one guy that's actually motioning over to John on the other side, and that's this guy. These guys are all kind of caught up in their own stuff.
Right.
Okay? But Peter's all the way over here. Okay? Now, okay, so let me just give you a little bit of background to help you out just a little bit. Okay? When they sat at the table like this, all right, and this is what the disciples were arguing about on the road. Do you remember when John and James asked if they could sit one on the left and one on the right? When you come into your kingdom, Lord, could I sit on this side and my brother sit on that side, or vice versa? It doesn't really matter as long as we're the two guys that sit right next to you, okay? Because the places of honor at the table, number one, the most honored guest actually sits in this spot right here. So that's appropriate that Jesus is there. That's where he would have sat. Not over here in the middle. He would have sat in the end. Okay? But not in that first seat. And then these two spots here on his right or on his left are the places of honor. Right? That's what the Zebedee boys, that's what their mom was asking for. Could you give my sons places of honor at the table? One on your left and one on your right. Okay so far? Okay. Well, we don't really have any high-ranking or honored guests here. These guys are all disciples. They're all of the same rank. Okay? And so what comes next then is, for the Jews that day, everything was based on age. Okay? And so age had privilege. Peter kind of is the leader by default because he's the oldest. Okay? The spot for the oldest is here. And why is Peter over here? That's his spot. How come John has Peter's spot?
He's trying to show humility.
Huh?
He's trying to show some humility.
Remember the lesson? Well, let's help you out with that a little bit. Show him Mark 9:35, Cora.
Yeah.
So here's Jesus. Teach him that lesson about humility, right? Somebody read that for me.
He sat down, called the 12 disciples over to him, and said, "Whoever wants to be first must take last place and be the servant of everyone else."
Aha! Okay, put the picture back up again. So after this, we kind of go around the table. It should be by age, chronologically. Okay, so where should John be seated? Over here. What's Peter doing over here?
Being the last.
Because Jesus said, if you want to be first, you need to take last place. Peter wants to be first. So he says, guess what, John? I'm taking your spot. So how does John end up over there in first place? Peter makes him swap. You go sit on the other side. So he does. Which is really kind of interesting because so this puts John in a place that he would not have been had Peter not kind of forced that on him. Okay? He's in the best place to hear every single thing that Jesus says. Okay? Remember we talked about John's book is very unique, and almost half of it is at the last week of Jesus' life. Well, almost a third of it is in the last night. Okay? And John has quotes about what happened at the Last Supper that none of the other disciples have. What gives him such a unique perspective, especially at the Last Supper? How come he knows stuff that these guys don't know? He's right there. He gets to hear everything. Right? We're talking about, like, at a typical dinner, like a wedding, you know, if you're three people down, you can't tell what they're even talking about down there. You know what I mean? Unless they stand up and make a speech about it or speak really loud. Most of the conversations that happen just a few people away from you go completely unnoticed. Okay? And so a lot of what Jesus says goes completely unnoticed by the rest of the disciples, but John hangs on every single word because he's got the best spot. A spot he should have had. Okay? He should have been over here at the end of the table here. This is the guy that if they needed anything, was supposed to get up and go get it and bring it back. That's why the lowest ranking member had that spot. If you're the youngest in the family, that's where you sat. And you're the one that went and got everything. Okay? That's supposed to be John's spot. But because Peter wants to demonstrate that he's such a good disciple, and he's been listening to the lesson, he takes last place because Jesus said, if you want to be first, take the last seat. And so he does. And he probably had to wait the table that night Okay? But now Jesus has just said, right? One of you is going to betray me. And John, of course, is the youngest, and he doesn't say very much because he's the youngest. He's not supposed to say very much. If you're low in age, you're supposed to keep your mouth shut. But Peter's like, ask him who it is, ask him who it is. John! Would you ask him at least? And he's trying to make that because he can't ask him. And apparently Jesus isn't really paying attention to him, sitting over there in the last spot. Okay? Anyway, we're getting there. Back to John 13. And so we're going to pick it up. We're going to reread verse 25. And then we're also going to read verse 26. Okay?
So that disciple leaned over to Jesus and asked, Lord, who is it? Jesus responded, it is the one to whom I give the bread I dip in the bowl. And when he had dipped it, he gave it to Judas, son of Simon Iscariot.
Okay, so let's go back to the picture one more time. Keeping Cora busy here, flipping back and forth.
Got it.
Okay. And so, which one's Judas?
Oh, next one.
How do we know? Jesus is going to feed him a piece of bread. Okay? He's the only one that he can. So the next question is, what's Judas doing here in this place of honor? Second oldest. Very good. Okay? That's where Judas is supposed to sit. It's supposed to be Peter, then Jesus, then Judas, and then I'm not sure about the rest of them. Okay? But we know that John's supposed to be on the end. We don't know anything about the ages of the rest of those, but these other guys that we do. Okay? And Judas is where he's supposed to be. Okay? And so John asks Jesus, who is it? Jesus tells him, but not loud enough that Peter can hear. He's the one that wants to know.
Yeah.
And so he's like, we're going to kind of do this on the slide. Just so you know, the one that I'm going to give this piece of bread to, he's the one. And so he does. Interestingly enough, John doesn't say anything. How do we know that? How do we know that the rest of the guys don't know that Jesus just identified his betrayer? Well, let's keep going a little bit. Now verses 27 to 29.
When Judas had eaten the bread, Satan entered into him. Then Jesus told him, hurry and do what you're going to do. None of the others at the table knew what Jesus meant. Since Judas was their treasurer, some thought Jesus was telling him to go and pay for the food or to give some money to the poor.
Okay. So guys, just so you know, there's a lot to unpack in this short few verses here, okay? But the very first thing that stood out to me is that none of the others knew what Jesus meant. He tells Judas, go ahead and do what it is that you have to do. Apparently that's loud enough that the rest of them hear it, okay? And they see Judas get up. And he leaves, and nobody understands why. Okay? They think, well, okay, he's got the money. Maybe Jesus is sending him to go buy something that we don't have. Or, one of the other things that was really customary during Passover was a time of real celebration. And one of the things that was very customary is that you were very gracious with the poor, very charitable, very giving. Okay, and that's why the temple would have been surrounded by beggars, especially at Passover, because everybody felt compelled to give to the poor. And they, well, maybe Jesus told him to go give some money to the poor, or maybe he sent him to go buy something that we don't have. They all assumed that he was on business that Jesus had told him ahead of time that he needed to do. Okay, how is it that none of them have any idea that he is the one who would betray Jesus? Okay, because the truth is, had the rest of the 12 known, and I'm not sure what John's doing with himself, but had the other guys known, especially Peter, that Judas was going out to betray Jesus, he never would have made it out of the room. You know what I'm talking about? They would have killed him there. or they certainly would have restrained him. They would not have let him left. Okay? And yet nobody tries to stop him because they assume he's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Right? Okay? It's one of those things where, it's a huge warning. You know what I mean? And, we talked about in our group a little bit about that discernment thing. Yeah, I get fooled all the time because I don't have great discernment about people. Now, when it comes to that, it's like, whatever I see, if I take everything at face value. And so, you can be a rat behind closed doors, and I would never recognize it. In fact, in some of our marriage class stuff, Nicole and I get into big arguments because I'll always defend the guy. You know, and she'll be like, just so you know, he's not all that. He's doing X, Y, and Z at home. I'm like, not my guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I don't get that. Okay? Because you can fool people. You know what I mean? Now, you would think if they hung around with guys that closely for that long, they would know. And this isn't the first time Judas has done something that was not on the up and up. Okay? But now the guys recognize it. They all think he's just one of the guys. Okay? But regardless of whether you can fool other people or not, we're not fooling Jesus. Jesus knew from the very beginning. He knew what was going on inside Judas's heart. And guys, he knows what's going on in our heart. Okay? We always hear in Scripture, God doesn't judge appearances like we do. God judges from the inside out. What's happening on the inside? Because appearances can be
deceiving,
right? Okay. The other thing that stands out, though, is this up here. Satan entered into him. Okay, so I've had this discussion a number of times. Actually, I had it in a class at seminary when I didn't really understand that phrase all that much, and went back and forth with another guy who had a difference of opinion. It's like, okay, so Satan entered into him. Does that mean the devil made Judas do it? Is he just like this helpless pawn in all of this, and we should feel sorry for him? Right? It's like he's just sitting at the table, and so boom, Satan entered into him, and he couldn't control himself. What do you think about that? Then he should get pardoned, right? It's like
he made his choice earlier to betray Jesus. And he took the money.
Yeah. Okay, he's made some choices along the way, and actually, unfortunately, this is one of those verses that doesn't get translated very well. Okay, and so I want to kind of work through that just a little bit. We're not going to have enough time to go all the way through it. This is one of those things that really stood out, and I'm like, well, we probably need another week to talk about this. Okay, but let's go next to Mark 3:14-15, because it's like, how in the world could somebody like Judas, one of Jesus' disciples, one that had been with him for all that time, how could he end up knowing Jesus as well as he does, end up betraying him at the end? I mean, selling out. And we'll get to the price in just a second. But anyway, let's go ahead and read the Mark verses.
Then he appointed 12 of them and called them his apostles. They were able to accompany him. And he would send them out to preach, giving them authority to cast out demons.
Okay, so we're told right in the very beginning of the ministry, Jesus gave all of his disciples the power and the authority to cast out demons. Okay? It seems like if anybody could resist the power of the demonic, anybody could resist a Satan, it should be one of Jesus' disciples. Right? It doesn't make any sense that he would be possessed. And in fact, he's really not. Okay? So I just want to make it clear. The way that the Jews phrase things, or the Greeks phrase things, sometimes are a little bit different. And so when we read that, Satan entered into him, what it really means is he gave Satan great influence over his life. Okay? Because I have to kind of give that away, you know what I'm talking about? I open the doors that allow Satan to have influence in my life, and that's one of the things that we're going to talk about. He doesn't just come upon someone and take over, and now I direct all of your... It doesn't work like that. Okay? And so when it says Satan entered into him, what it says is basically he opened up the door so Satan could have great influence on him. Okay? And at that point, Satan has great influence over Judas. And so he's going to do what he'd already been considering and already set up doing for quite some time. Okay, so you with me so far? Okay.
Sorry, I had a question. So this is the one thing I get confused about. He had the free will, the choice that God gave him.
Correct.
To do these things. However, if he didn't, then the prophecy wouldn't have been fulfilled. So... Did he really have a choice? That's where I get caught up.
Well, here's the thing, Rachel. Okay, foreknowledge is not the same as predestination. Okay, so let me explain that. Okay, knowing that you're going to do something doesn't mean that I ordained that you're going to do it. Okay, so way back in the beginning, okay, the prophets, right, through God, knew that Jesus would be betrayed.
Right.
In fact, from the very beginning, they knew who was going to do it. So that's foreknowledge, right? God has foreknowledge of everything that's going to happen. That doesn't mean that God ordained that that should happen. Okay? I only know that you're going to. I've given you the choice. I know that you're going to have the choice. I know that you're going to do that. That's not the same thing as I've set it up so that Rachel can't resist doing this. Okay? Yeah, so that's a really, really good question. And that's the exact debate that I had with one of my colleagues when I was in seminary. And we went back and forth for quite a while over that, okay? Because it was already predestined. It's like, so how can you hold this against somebody who that's what he's only doing what he's supposed to do, what God has made him do, but we hear that God doesn't force us to do things that are against his will. That's something that we choose to do. Okay, so let's pick it up. Actually, let's look at James 1, and we'll kind of build on that just a little bit. So, if somebody could read that.
Temptation comes from our own desires, which entice us and drag us away. These desires give birth to sinful actions, and when sin is allowed to grow, it gives birth to death.
Okay, and so what comes before that is about God doesn't cause us to do, God doesn't tempt us, and God doesn't cause us to do things that are evil. Okay, evil doesn't come from God. Okay, it comes from Satan, it comes from the demonic, and sometimes it comes from man who chooses that. All right, because what we're going to build on next time, and I'm kind of setting up this time, is Judas had been kind of walking down that path for a while. This wasn't something that all of a sudden he just decided. Like, oh, Satan came against him and he decided to do something evil all at once. Okay? He'd been kind of walking down that path for a little while. Okay? And that's why James says it starts off with desire. And if the desire is not held in check and it continues to grow, it becomes actions, right? Evil actions. Okay? And those evil actions can actually cause great destruction. Right? Those are the things that destroy us. But where does it start out? It starts out when we start to embrace the desires that we know we shouldn't have, that they're not right. But we start to think, we let it play in our head for a little bit, and we start to think about it, It's like, wow, maybe I could get away with that if I just, okay? And all those thoughts that kind of come against us, it's like, this would be okay, this is just a little one. And I start down that way, and I let it grow into more and more. Okay, and for Judas, that greed and that love of money was one of those things that he had let go from being a desire to being action, and it had grown over time. Okay, so let's go back a little bit. And this one we already read. Okay, and it's from John chapter 12. So we'll back up just a little bit. Maybe you guys remember this. We talked about when Judas was so upset because that woman had wasted expensive perfume on Jesus' feet, where they could have got a lot of money for that if they just would have sold it rather than wasted it like that. Remember that? Let's go ahead and read it again for those that may not remember.
But Judas Iscariot, the disciple who would soon betray him, said, "That perfume was worth a year's wages. It should have been sold and the money given to the poor." Not that he cared for the poor. He was a thief, and since he was in charge of the disciples' money, he often stole some for himself.
Okay, so Judas had been kind of taking money out of the community funds for a while. Okay? Makes you wonder sometimes, it was like, why did Jesus put him in charge of the money bag? If he knew he was a rat. Okay? Well, remember, Judas is the second oldest, which means he gets responsibility before some of the younger guys. And so it makes sense that one of the older guys is going to have responsibility like that. Okay? But Judas has been helping himself for a while. Okay? And he's liking it that he has more money than the rest of the guys, and all the stuff that comes with money. But along with that goes Satan's influence, right? So he's been listening to Satan for a while. And every time you listen to him, the voice gets a little bit more appealing and a little bit stronger inside you. Okay? The more you entertain those thoughts, the more it becomes likely. Okay? The voice of the enemy becomes stronger as we listen to it more and more. Okay, let's go next to Matthew 26, beginning with verse 14.
Then Judas Iscariot,
one of the 12 disciples, went to the leading priest and asked, "How much will you pay me to betray Jesus to you?" And they gave him 30 pieces of silver. From that time on, Judas began looking for an opportunity to betray Jesus.
Okay, so when they get into town, especially after they wasted that rich perfume that they could have had, it becomes clear, right? We talked about it before. They got a bounty out on Jesus. They're like, we'll pay for information leading to his arrest. And so Judas is intrigued by that. So he actually goes to the authorities and he asks them, "So how much are you paying for information leading to his arrest?" And they tell him. Right, so now he's taking that next step. It's like, that sounds interesting. I wonder how much I could get. And they say, 30 pieces of silver. Now, that sounds like a lot, right? Silver's like really valuable. How much is that? He sold his soul for that. How much is it? Was it a lot of money? In today's economy, it would have been a little bit less than $3,000 with the price of silver today. Are you with me so far? Mm-hmm. That's not a ton of money. You know what I'm saying? And yet, for 30 pieces of silver, he says, "I'll help you get them." Okay? Let's go on to 13:2.
It was time for supper, and the devil had already prompted Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus.
Okay, so we go back a little ways. It's like, when they sat down to dinner, it's already started to play through Judas's mind what he could get. Right? He's already given Satan a huge amount of influence. And so now, even as they're sitting there, right, he's starting to think, And all of a sudden, Satan has this influence, and Satan had already put it on his heart to betray him. Right? Now it's just a matter of, are you going to listen to the voice? Are you going to carry out the action? And so Satan prompts him, and then we read at the end, John 13:30.
So Judas left at once, going out into the night.
And where's he going? Going out to betray Jesus. Okay? So, guys, here's where it's like, man, we're finally getting into the stuff that's, this is the practical application. How do you keep, because I look out here, so I see lots of what I call faithful disciples. I've seen you guys. I've been around some of you for even longer than 3 years. Some of you. I think I know you pretty well. And if Jesus were to come in here and say, one of the people in this room is going to be betraying me, I'd be like, who is it? You know what I'm saying? And sometimes there's that question inside of you, like all the disciples went around and said, Lord, is it me? Okay, how can I trust myself in that? So the question, and we're out of time for today, we're going to take communion in just a second, okay, is how do I keep from being that disciple, right? The Judas, who followed Jesus faithfully for a long period of time and then falls into such sin. Okay, I'm guessing early on, and maybe not that much earlier than this, if you would have told Judas, you're going to betray Jesus, he would have said, not a chance in the world. Right? And yet he becomes the one. Okay? He started down that, at some point he started down that road, and it turned out to be a road that he could not return from. So the question is, how do we keep from going down that road in the first place? How do we keep from being that Judas? How do we go from being keep from being a faithful disciple, which we are, to one that is a betrayer? Okay? And so guys, you're going to have to come back next time as we're going to talk about the practical application of what that looks like for us. Here's we're going to kind of get out of the book of John and kind of talk about that. But it's like, man, I couldn't move past this one. It's like, how do you go from that? Okay? Because the truth is, and after that we're going to talk about the other one that betrayed Jesus not too much after that. Do you remember that one? Peter betrays him the same way. Well, not exactly the same way, but he betrays him in a similar way. Okay? And so that's where we're going.